Large churches in the U.S. host various conferences each year. The Gospel Coalition has a national conference every other year, and every major denomination in America has annual assemblies and business meetings. But house churches in China cannot gather in these sorts of gatherings because of political and security reasons. However, our brothers and sisters in China still find creative ways to get together and encourage one another. Recently, a couple of us were able to join them in one of these gatherings, and that's what we're going to talk about today, some of our reflections from that gathering. My name is Beth Gregory.
And I'm Ryan Zhang. This is the House Church in China podcast. Beth, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm recently back from a family vacation, and I need a vacation from my vacation.
Vacation.
How are you?
Vacation. Good. We are looking forward to a vacation this weekend, but I may need another vacation after that. So I totally understand what you mean.
It's always the way.
Yeah. And today we have our first special guest joining our podcast. So Matt, please say hi and introduce yourself.
Hey guys, good to see you. I also have a vacation coming up next week. So we're all in a good spot right now. Hi, yeah, I'm Matt. You guys know me. I've worked with you at China Partnership for around 7 years now. Started part-time in 2019 and then moved to full-time in 2020. Have worked in China Partnership in various communications and partner relations roles, generally all focused on helping people and churches know what it looks like to support China and how they can support China and the church in China. In the West, we, as you guys know, we tend to think of, sending missionaries, but what about if you can't send missionaries or if sending missionaries isn't the right thing to do? Should we just forget about China? And of course, the answer to that is no. So a big part of my job in communications, partner relations is just helping people see what that looks like. And usually for us, that means giving, right? Giving financially to China Partnership to help us as we come alongside the churches in China. And also praying. Beth, you and I have been involved in the prayer ministry at China Partnership for many years now. And it's one of my favorite things that we get to do, just helping encourage people to pray and praying together for our brothers and sisters in China.
That's great. Well, we're glad you could join us today. And guys, since we're talking about large Christian gatherings you're part of, what was the last time you went to a large gathering? That's not your church. And by large, I meant like over 1,000 people, 500 to 1,000 people, over 500 to 5,000 people.
Yeah, my husband is a pastor in the PCA. And last summer, he attended General Assembly, the denomination's annual meeting. And we had a family trip planned around that gathering. And so I went to a few of the sessions with him. So that was probably about a year ago is the last time I did something like that. What about y'all?
I feel like, honestly, I don't really attend many conferences. I was thinking about this question. I think the last conference I attended was actually with you guys in Jakarta, Indonesia. And I think that was 3 years ago now, which obviously that's a little different than what you're talking about when it's sort of a big global conference versus those conferences that we're all familiar with in the U.S. So, yeah, I think that was probably the last one.
Yeah, I think for me, it's the same thing that Beth was talking about, except it's this year's General Assembly for the PCA, and I'm a pastor in the PCA, so it's one of our annual duties, annual obligations, but also I do enjoy going sometimes. I could see my friends there. It is very encouraging to get together and to do the business part is not so encouraging, but to encourage one another when you see them, to catch up. And there's a certain sense of belonging and even you would say power when you all worship together and with a room of almost 3,000, 4,000 people, when you sing together, there's a sense of, you get a glimpse of the kingdom that way. And also you get to listen to people who are outside of your circles. And sometimes you get to listen to some pretty good preachers too. And so it's been great every year to look forward to that, to see my friends and gather. But for that type of experiences, that usually doesn't happen inside China, especially with the Chinese house churches. And just let's go briefly to talk through why this doesn't happen in China. And the first thing I could think of as I was talking about pastors, and it's just that there's not a lot of celebrity pastors inside China. And usually these conferences are centered around certain individuals or a group of individuals that to draw people to come together. And not that there's no tendency, no temptation to be celebrities in China, that or no, that there are people that do look up to a certain type of leaders, but it's just because of persecution that culture cannot exist within the Chinese churches. So you don't have a lot of Christian celebrities to lead those conferences.
I think one thing is that because of the persecution in China, the house churches themselves are not officially organized or recognized. They have their organizational, institutional tendencies, but they're not registered with the government. And the only formal Christian organization in China is really the state church. So because the house churches aren't formally organized like that, they are unable to hold big conferences. And I just wanted to add a little note because I was thinking about this. I think especially for people who are in ministry, whether that be pastors or lay leaders, sometimes it is really powerful and really good to get together with other Christians and just worship the Lord and be encouraged, especially when you're not planning the service. I think there's a lot of power in conferences because it really is just a chance to worship and gather and take the burden of planning the worship off of your own shoulders. So they can be a really amazing and really powerful time. What about you, Matt? You have any thoughts?
I mean, I think you guys have both mentioned persecution. And I think the reality is that is one of, if not the main reason, right? Like if there wasn't the persecution, maybe we would see some big gatherings, big conferences in China. But yeah, you know, having a lot of people gathered together, even if you don't mean it to be a threat, it just presents like a picture, an image of look how many people are standing together believing this thing. And that's something that the Chinese government would just not be comfortable with. And so, we've seen even in recent years, it's been hard enough for churches just to gather themselves, right? That we see the bigger the church is, the bigger the church gathering, the more pressure they receive from the local officials, from the police, and churches are consistently having to break into smaller and smaller groups. So they're just trying to meet as a church, let alone trying to gather together with, you know, other churches around the country and all come together for worship. That's just under the political pressure and the persecution we see, it's just not a possibility.
Yeah, and I think that's not just churches. There's not much of a civil society in China at all. There's not a lot of non-government organizations, nonprofit that could gather together to organize formal gatherings like this. So when a certain organization gets a certain point, it attracts government attention and they either get co-opted into the government as part of the state or they will have to limit how big they could grow. And so because of that, I don't hear about a lot of gatherings that's not sponsored by the state. I remember I grew up in China in the 90s and I was watching a lot of Hong Kong television, and Hong Kong back then was still under the British rule. And I would see a lot of protests on the street all the time. Like people just go on the street and protest almost like every night on the 90 news. I was like, oh, it's another protest. And I was like, why doesn't that happen here in Guangzhou, which is about just 2 hours north of Hong Kong by train? And then one day I was driving home with my dad after school and I saw a group of people like sitting outside with a banner outside the state government's office. I was like, whoa, it does exist. But then I could only think of that one time that I saw something like that. So you don't see gatherings of people in China much. Like there are a lot of people who are like, China's very crowded, but large gathering, organized gathering don't really exist.
So although these kinds of large gatherings aren't possible in China, it actually doesn't mean that Chinese pastors and church leaders cannot ever get together. It just means they have to be very careful how they do so. And make sure to try to evade government attention when they do gather. So we're going to talk about a gathering, but for obvious reasons, we're not going to share how this took place. But Matt and Ryan, you recently were able to attend and be a part of a gathering like this recently. And that's why we're here today. What were some of your takeaways from that time that you were able to spend with the Chinese House Church? Matt, why don't you kick us off?
I mean, first of all, it's just always such a blessing and a privilege to get to spend time with Chinese Christians coming out from the mainland. There's just very few opportunities to do that. And even to do that in just a small number, a small group of people is just, it's always a privilege that we don't take for granted. And it's just different to be able to be there with them in person, spend that time there with them in person. I think from this most recent gathering that you and I attended, Ryan, the thing that surprised me the most, because we know, like I said, like persecution's getting worse. Like persecution has been getting worse since 2018, but even over the last year, we're recording this in 2026, and even since 2025, it's just been getting worse. So I think I went to the gathering and expected a lot of heaviness. What really surprised me is how celebratory it felt and like how light it felt, weirdly, where you almost wouldn't know, not that that weight isn't there, not that that trauma isn't real, not that that they don't feel that pressure, but just spending that time with those pastors and their families and just being with them and laughing and being all together. And just, it just felt like a celebration. It felt like such a great time to be together. I think one of the other things too, is I just felt their hunger for the gospel and their hunger to spread the gospel, where yes, the pressure is increasing, but it just doesn't feel like they're slowing down, at least, at least the people we were gathered with. And then finally, the other thing that I'm always impressed by whenever we get to see them in person is just how encouraged they are to find out that we are praying for them. This is a story actually from a different gathering that the three of us were at in the past. But I remember talking to a pastor from China. He was asking what I do. And I was telling him about our prayer ministry at China Partnership and how we pray for churches in China. And later on, he actually found me again. And he said, "Hey, I've been thinking about what you said and about people in the US praying for churches in China. And I just want you to know how encouraged I was by that. Before you told me that, I thought that we were alone. But then hearing that people around the world are praying for Christians in China, it's just incredibly encouraging to me. So I just want to say thank you." And so I know that wasn't from this most recent gathering, but that has just stuck with me so much that even in this recent gathering, I was thinking about, man, I just want more people to be praying for these guys, for their families, for these churches in China.
Brian, what were some of your takeaways from your recent time?
Yeah, I had similar impressions. It's lighthearted in a lot of ways, and people were happy to see each other. One of the images I remember was like in church history, I remember reading when the persecution finally ended under Roman Empire and they gathered for the first time, I think the Council of Nicaea. And I remember the textbook talk about how happy they were to see each other for the first time openly, all these Christians who have been persecuted. And I get a similar sense of joy when I go to a conference like this, because they are happy to see each other, that it's very out of their ordinary life. So there's a sense of joy and lightheartedness there. Also, there's not a lot of talk about persecution. I think for them, they've lived under that environment for so long, that's not even like a big topic for them anymore. And it's not like a major thing to discuss how to fight it, how to defend themselves, and that, like that's, there's not a lot of talks on that. But most people take it as their normal, and they learn to live and do ministry with persecution in the background, and they talk about strategies how to do ministries in certain type of environments, but it's not a big topic in the forefront. I think that's kind of encouraging to me. And also, just being Christians in China does make you kind of weird in a good way. So you do hear a lot of stories, how they raise their kids, how they live their lives. And that does sound very interesting to me, because it's just so different from how we live and how even other Chinese people live.
Can I ask you to like specify, what do you mean? What specifically was interesting to you, Ryan?
Like one of the things I've talked to people a lot in this time, and we will hopefully share some of those stories with you in the future, is like, how do they educate their kids? And the different ways they think about education, not just the ways they, different school selections, different school options they choose for the kids, but the philosophy they bring into raising their kids and what they believe about parenting, that's very different from traditional Chinese parenting. So that is very refreshing to hear. And also to, they talked about living and how they make a living in China. Because as Christians, church pastors, you're not making a lot of money, but you also get a sense of learning about how God provides for you. And some people are bivocational, if that's somewhat possible still in China. So how creative they are in making a living and going about their days and doing ministries.
I just kind of want to point out, so it sounds like what you're saying is that it's not overt persecution that's like defining the tenor of the conversations or the discussions that people are having, but it is extremely countercultural. Like, yes, they are very much going against the grain of their society.
Yes. And let's say even without persecution, mm-hmm. they are going against the grain in so many other ways already. And persecution mm-hmm. just make that more obvious or maybe difficult. But China, for so long being a culture that's not shaped by the Bible, they have a lot of different idols. And that's, so when you do turn to God and live according to the Bible, it is very different from traditional Chinese values. So I think that's refreshing to hear. And I'm always impressed when I gather with the Chinese pastors and believers, just how thoughtful and theologically mature they are. Because we do have, maybe in the West, we think, oh, they're house churches, they don't have formal theological education, they cannot even worship openly, they don't have all the books that we have. And so we kind of have this picture, maybe they're just not as mature theologically, or they don't know as much. But that's not true at all. I think a lot of them do, in a lot of various ways. They are very eager to learn, and they do know a lot about theology, even a lot more well-versed than some of our, actually, I would say like most of our church members at our church, because this is what they have a hunger for it. And that hunger really drives their desire to learn, and they do a lot of reading. If one thing, it's no stereotype, but you know, one thing Chinese pastors are good at is studying, right? So they spend a lot of time learning from others, reading, and they are very thoughtful.
Yeah. Can I follow up on that? What do you feel like they're most interested in learning about? Like, what are the topics that are really grabbing their attention? Like, where are they spending their time and energy from what y'all observed?
Yeah, well, Matt, feel free to jump in here. But even from the topics that we talk about at the conference, there are a lot of discussions on mercy ministry, because that's one area that they understand the church needs to do better at, and to engage with society and even philosophy, why they should do mercy ministry. They're always talking about church planting and the theology behind it, and church planting in the city, a vision to serve the city. A lot of that, it's not new to them, but they want to know more. They are always just wanting to know more. And theology-wise, we do have a lot of systematic theology written, like books translated into Chinese. So they are always looking for ways to download those books and buy those books. And that's always been like the talk about how to get books. You know, that's a common topic that I hear.
So it sounds like mercy ministry, church planning. Was there anything you noticed, Matt, or just kind of agree with Ryan?
I think, and I would not make this statement broadly of the entire Chinese house church, because I don't know that you could say that, but at least with this particular gathering, I was also struck by like how anytime it got into theology, it never strayed far from like, but how does that actually impact real life and your ministry and your life and your heart? There's a heavy focus on like personal transformation, and the theology, from my perspective, never felt like, yeah, like this disembodied, like up here, like intellectual conversation. It was all so rooted and connected with the actual situations of the people and trying to live and follow Christ faithfully. I don't know if that's true of like everyone in the house church. The house church is a big thing, but at least in this particular gathering, I was struck by that.
That's interesting, because what you're saying is something that people often observe about Chinese culture, that it's very pragmatic.
Yeah.
they desire for everything, you know, how does it work out in the real world? That's interesting.
Yeah, and can I add that think, you know, one of the topics that gets circulated around the Chinese church a lot is eschatology, you know, the belief about last things, and not like end times in terms of rapture, but what the future kingdom, new heaven and new earth will look like, the reign of God, the reign of Christ. And that to us seems like a very abstract topic and also controversial in a lot of ways. But for them, it's very real and present, because that's their hope. And also that informs their theology, informs who Jesus is right now as their King and Lord in heaven. And for them, it's a huge encouragement. So that's a topic that's always not far from their conversation through all these conferences.
Well, and maybe that's part of why it felt so celebratory while we were there, Ryan. Like the present reality of what they're hoping for, it feels real to them, maybe in a way that when they get together, it shows because they have fewer chances to get together, getting together actually shows a picture of what that is going to look like. I agree. I think that it's a picture of what they're hoping for.
I wanted to ask y'all if there are any specific stories that really stood out from that time you had with Chinese house church Christians. Is there anything that really leaps to the front of your mind?
I think one very fun, memorable experience for me is we were doing some hiking around, and then I really wanted to get some nice food. And I found this restaurant and walked in, and I saw a group of pastors there. I recognized maybe two or three of them. There were like five, six of them. And they were very excited to see me. They asked me to join them. I ordered food. Eventually, they even paid for my food and my meal. And I realized they were all from the same city, but now they are doing ministry in different parts of China or even Asia. So there's a sense of, yeah, they get together because they knew each other from the hometown, but they're also serving the kingdom in various places. And so this gathering does offer them a chance to get together and to catch up, but also a sense of collaboration. Even if they're different places around Asia, they share a lot of experience. They share a lot of challenges. And so this is a chance for them to catch up. And it was nice to join them. And I just feel they're very hospitable. Like they're very warm and open to me. Like I'm somewhat of a stranger to them. I live in America. But they love seeing us there, and they really appreciate that we took the time to join them and connect with them and talk to them. So that was a great lunch for me. And the food was great.
Matt, was there anything for you or?
Yeah, not so much a story as much as a picture. You guys know in most Asian cultures, to some degree, there's the tradition of you don't wear your shoes inside, or you have house shoes or house slippers or something like this, right? Which I really like. And I had a moment when we were gathering together, we kind of went into the area where we were gathering for worship specifically to sing. And everyone took their shoes off and kind of left them at the door, left them, you know, outside. And I just, I remember looking over while everyone was singing worship and seeing all these shoes and just thinking how cool it was, like seeing my pair of shoes, like seeing, you know, like Ryan's, like seeing some of our coworkers who traveled from the States with these pairs of shoes of people from mainland China. And just, it was just such a cool picture of like, these shoes have come from all over the world. Like these shoes came from all over China. Like where these feet had to go to get to this place so that we could all be together took a lot of work. And yet, like, what a cool picture of the body of Christ to just like see all these shoes lined up and hear all of our voices singing together. It was just a moment that really, really struck me as incredibly beautiful.
What do you guys think as far as like how you felt like Chinese Christians were interacting with believers from the West? You know, Ryan, you grew up in China, but like you mentioned, you've lived in America for a long time now. Can y'all tell me a little bit about the tenor of those interactions and what might it look like for those of us who do live in the US or in Western countries to support and encourage Chinese house churches?
I think there's still a little sense, whether it's accurate or not, looking to the Western church as the bigger brother. And I think because they recognize we do have the resources, we do have financially and academically, we do have the well-known names that they hear about and read about. And so they, when we interact with them, they kind of have a sense of deference to us, which is humbling in a way because I don't think we deserve it. And then also that they do, and because the churches in the West been around much longer and bigger, so they do kind of look to the West in a way for like training, and they are open to receiving our feedback, and they would love to hear that they're open to sharing with us. And they are very encouraged, like Matt said, to hear that we are praying for them. So there's a little sense of like, hey, we would love to get more of you, you know. And I think even when we have conferences like this, anytime we have a Western speaker come in, they are always very eager to hear. And I think that struck me to be more careful and thoughtful about how I engage with them, because there is a trust there that they give me that I didn't feel like I have to earn, but I still want to steward it wisely.
Yeah, that's a really good answer. Sort of going off of that, yeah, I feel like there's an incredible amount of graciousness. I mean, for me, my Chinese is very, very bad, and the amount of to which I always still feel welcomed and cared for by not just, you know, Chinese Christians, but Chinese people in general. And then, yeah, I think to your point, Ryan, I'm always surprised. Anecdotally, I feel like the average Chinese Christian, maybe it's just because I'm interacting with a lot of pastors, I feel like when I meet them and talk to them, I'm always surprised by how much they know about like how many Western resources they're aware of, like Western theology, Western theologians, like they've read more than me, like, and even like seminaries and Christian schools, that they like know all the seminaries and Christian schools in the West. And I feel like the degree, average degree of knowledge, again, maybe it's because I'm interacting with pastors, but I just feel like it's very high.
I want to jump in and feel free to contradict because I wasn't at this last gathering. But one thing I've always noticed at these sorts of times is that it really is very important to Chinese believers to remember that they're part of a global church, and that we might live in one part of the world and they live in another, but we're actually family, like we're brothers and sisters. I think the Chinese government itself puts a lot of emphasis on like a very dangerous thing for Chinese Christians to do is to fraternize with believers in other countries. And that's because the Chinese government really does believe that isolation is a way to have control. And if we can just, to the extent that we're able to come together and remind believers that they are not forgotten, that they are not alone, that we are all part of the same family.
Yes, very true. They love, like in this gathering, there are some of us from the US, but also some from other parts of Asia. And the sense of, they know that there are people from overseas, and they love that they are very, they don't see us as outsiders because they just feel like we're all one big family. Mm-hmm. And also from some of the brothers and sisters serving overseas, they talk about how they talk about their ministry in other parts of Asia. It's very encouraging to know that they're not just there to serve the Chinese people, the Chinese diaspora, but they are there to reach locals because they want to see God's kingdom expand. So there's, I think I have not talked to a lot of Chinese people, but I do have a sense of they're more internet globally minded. I can say that maybe just for this particular group of people, but I'm always struck by how much they look forward. And maybe because of the eschatology mindset of God's kingdom, you know, every nation, tribe, and tongue, that they do have this kind of global mindset, and they want to be part of that global church that I don't see in even some of the churches in America.
Hmm. Well, every time we get together and talk on a podcast like this, we always really want to keep focused on not just what we're learning, but how this can move us to prayer. So final question, will the time you're able to spend with believers at this gathering change the way you pray for the Chinese church?
I'll start. I think it's always good to be reminded. And when I go to these two, to realize that these are real people that we could pray for. And like, I know their names. I recognize their faces. I could imagine their faces when I pray. We sit down and share meals with them. So they are not just anonymous brothers and sisters. And so when we do share stories here, these are real people. And it's humbling to interact with them and to pray for them, but to just remember that they're real. And it's so easy to be isolated here in the West and kind of think of that's like a different world. And it's a different world, but we are brothers and sisters, there's a kindred spirit there that is very present. And it just, it makes my prayer more sincere that way.
Yeah, real and specific too, where there's a lot of general things that a lot of people, a lot of churches in China are dealing with right now that are all similar, like dealing with the bad economy, dealing with the government pressure. But then you start to meet some specific people, and every specific person has their own life as well, and their own context, their own situation. And so now it's so great and helpful to be able to meet some of those specific people and put faces to specific areas of ministry or specific cities, you know, like we met somebody who is working, doing a lot of ministry for people who, children who are mentally disabled, which, speaking of what you were saying about being countercultural, Ryan, like that's very countercultural. And now having met that person, I have that specific ministry in that specific city in my head, and it just makes it more rich to be able to pray for them.
Beth, what are your thoughts on that topic?
Yeah, I wasn't at this last gathering, but I think just in general, I echo what y'all said. Like, these are real people, real lives, real families, real struggles. They're struggling to follow Jesus just like we are. And Jesus is very real in their lives. So yeah, just, I think remembering that we're all part of the same family.
I will say one thing I would add is that sometimes it's easy to just pray general topic prayers, like God protect all those people being persecuted. But when you talk to them, that's not, yeah, sure, they need that, but they also have a lot of other things on their mind they want prayer for, like kids schooling, the next Sunday gathering. So it's helpful to learn how to pray for them specifically. And I'll put in a plug there, we have a prayer ministry, a China partnership, where we teach people how to pray specifically for the Chinese church beyond the service level, general level prayer, but to talk about how to pray for them specifically on different areas of life. And I think that's very important to know, that they have other more present needs than just persecution, like all of us do.
I want to jump in and just say thank you, Ryan, for that great pitch. Yeah, we would love for people listening to this, if you have, if you've never joined our prayer team, if you haven't, if you're not receiving our prayer emails, yeah, we would love for you to sign up. You can do so on our website at chinapartnership.org/pray. Yeah, and what we basically send out an email every Sunday with prayer requests from the Chinese house churches. And they're edited for security. We have to, you know, we have to protect their identities, their locations, all of that. But yeah, we would just love for people to join us in praying for them.
Thank you for joining us, Matt. And it's good to have you. Hopefully you could come back some other time. And we want to hear from you, listeners. Thank you for tuning in today and joining our conversation. If you have met Christians from China, from the Chinese house church, what were your conversations like with them? What experience do you have talking to them, getting to know them? I would love to hear that from you. And also, if you get a chance, please share where you are listening to our podcast from. And what are you doing usually when you listen? We would love to hear what our listeners do and how we can meet you as well when we record. And if there's a topic that you would like to hear us muse about, please let us know as well. You can email us at info@chinapartnership.org.
Please join us next month when we'll be talking about the modern Chinese diaspora. As Chinese people spread out to all corners of the earth in this modern age, how is this affecting mission? And is the gospel spreading through this movement? What opportunities are arising as there is a current mass migration of Chinese people? So come back and join us next month as we discuss that topic. Thanks.